/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
There's plenty for President Trump to be pleased about in the latest poll on his job performance. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes has the story.
The new NBC Wall Street Journal survey gives President Trump the highest approval numbers of his presidency from Republican voters. It shows 88% of Republicans surveyed approve of how he's handling his duties. His approval rating among all registered voters, 45%. That's up a point from last month. 52% of all voters disapprove of his job performance, and that includes 44% who strongly disapprove. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Ritz is recalling 16 varieties of Ritz cracker sandwiches and Ritz Bits products in the United States. The products contain whey powder, which its supplier has recalled due to a potential presence of salmonella. So far, no one has gotten ill from eating the crackers, and if you have a question as to what specific brand is being recalled, please check out the Ritz website. This is USA Radio News.
Wyatt Cox Classic Radio Theater. I've been using a MyPillow now for almost a year, and I've had the best sleep of my life, and you can too. What are you waiting for? This special, it's the best you'll ever have. Buy one, get one free. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the Buy One, Get One Free special, use promo code USA. You'll get one free pillow when you buy one at regular price, or call 1-800-951-8175. Be sure you use promo code USA, or go to MyPillow.com, promo code USA. Do it now.
President Trump's historic decision to relocate America's Israel embassy to Jerusalem is attracting more and more followers on the world stage. We're starting to see more and more European countries do the same thing. Former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee explains why moving the embassy was a big deal to him.
Israel is not just another piece of real estate, maybe the most hotly contested piece of real estate on earth, but it has biblical dimensions, biblical connections, and that's important to me. I think the title deed goes all the way back to Abraham. So to see a president recognize the rightful home of the Jewish people in a Jewish state and Jerusalem as its capital, and by the way, Jerusalem has only been capital to one people in the history of the earth, and that's to the Jews. So it's important to me that we respect that.
Huckabee also shares a conversation he had with President Trump.
And I told him, I said, Mr. President, there are two things that evangelicals, who, by the way, were the basis for him being elected. They overwhelmingly, like 75-80% of evangelicals voted for Donald Trump and still support him. And that surprised a lot of people, but they like someone who sticks by the black and the white of the right and the wrong and what they stand for. So Donald Trump, and I had this conversation, and I said to him, Mr. President, there are two things evangelicals consider non-negotiable, the sanctity of human life, and the second thing is unwavering commitment to the sovereignty of Israel.
For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Good afternoon. Weather, showers, and this is this afternoon, showers and possibly a thunderstorm. Some of the storms could produce a heavy rainfall, high near 82. Southwest wind around 10 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 80%. New rainfall amounts between a quarter and a half an inch possible. Tonight, showers and possibly a thunderstorm, mainly before 3 a.m. Then a chance of thunderstorms and showers after 3 p.m. Some of the storms could produce heavy rain, patchy fog after 1 a.m., low around 71. Southeast wind 6 to 9 miles per hour, chance of precipitation is 80%. New rainfall amounts between a quarter and a half an inch possible. Tomorrow, showers likely and possibly a thunderstorm, mostly cloudy with a high near 82. Southeast wind 8 to 11 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 60%. New rainfall amounts between a tenth and a quarter of an inch, especially higher amounts, except higher amounts possible in thunderstorms. Tomorrow night, showers likely and possibly a thunderstorm before 9 p.m. Then a chance of showers and thunderstorms between 9 p.m. and 3 a.m. Then showers likely and possibly a thunderstorm after 3 a.m. It sounds like a broken rain record, doesn't it? Mostly cloudy with a low around 72 during the day. Southwest, southeast wind 8 to 10 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 70%. New rainfall amounts between a quarter and a half an inch possible. Okay, Wednesday through Wednesday night, we have more showers. Some of the storms could produce heavy rain, mostly cloudy with a high near 79. South wind 8 to 10 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation 70%. New rainfall amounts between 1 and 2 inches possible. I see that going ahead to Thursday, we're still into showers likely. And Thursday night, I don't even want to go any further. With that said, here is Larry Cartwright of Mental Health Matters.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Mental Health Matters. I'm your host, Larry Cartwright, and my co-host is Tracy Ivey. And this is NAMI's Hour, compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and there is a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we're all volunteers. We have no paid staff. We have no office. We work out of our houses, use our own phones, cell phones, etc. What we try to do is we try to help people who either have themselves have a mental health issue or help families who have someone in their family or know someone or work with someone who has a mental health issue. We do it in numerous ways. One of the ways we do it is we have what they call a family-to-family class, which is a 12-week course where we teach people who take the course, families, etc., what to say, what not to say in certain circumstances, what to do, what not to do in certain circumstances. We teach them about medications, side effects, and basically we try to get them to understand what it's like to be the person with the illness. We have what they call a basics course, which is a 6-week course for families who have children 18 and under who have mental health issues. And everything we do is free. There is no charge. You do have to register for the classes, but everything is free in the class. All the books and everything we give out is free. We do have a monthly support group, which is the third Thursday of every month, and it is held at 52 East Main Street in Flemington, New Jersey, and it is from 7 to 8:30, border 9, depending. You don't have to register for the support group, but you do have to register for the classes because we're only allowed to have so many in a class. You don't have to be a member of NAMI to take class or come to the support group. If you have any questions or anything like that, you can call us at 908-284-0500. We have no one sitting there answering the phone, but the lady that does it, she checks it at least once or twice a day, and she can get back to you 90% of the time with answers to your questions. And those questions she can't answer, she sends to my wife and I, and we'll get back to you within a day or so. Okay, so the phone number if you need it is 908-284-0500. We are very privileged to have with us today Leslie Gable, who is from Hunterdon Prevention Resources. And I had to ask Tracy asked her what her title was because I didn't have it. I had title with a question mark. And she is the co-CEO of Hunterdon Prevention. And I really appreciate, Leslie, you take the time out to come on the show today because I know you got a busy schedule and so on and so forth. And I know we have a lot to go over. So why don't we get started? First of all, there seems to be a addiction
epidemic
rising in the country and in this area. Mm-hmm. Would you like to address that?
Sure. I think the first thing is to really explain to the audience is what is an opioid. People use the term opioid, opiates, but what do we mean when we're saying those words? There is a difference. An opioid is a synthetic drug, usually a prescription painkiller medication like hydrocodone, morphine, codeine, things of that nature. That's more of, if you can think about it, it's kind of manufactured in a lab. An opiate is naturally derived from drugs such as heroin and opium. So when people are talking about you know, opiates mm-hmm. and opioid. That's really the distinction as far as what the words mean.
Okay.
We use the term opioid. So no, when someone's saying they have an opiate use issue or problem, it could be one or the other.
Right.
So I think it's important to explain what those are, because a lot of times we use words and someone says, you know, they have a heroin problem. Well, that really is a form of an opioid. Mm-hmm. So that's really what we're talking about. And what happens is, what's happened in the United States of, I don't know, we get asked, like, where did this come from? It was the perfect storm for years in the making. This didn't just happen overnight. What happens is these prescription pain pills are really dispensed at a very high level across the U.S. when originally their intention was for end-of-life pain management. And it became something prescribed on a regular basis, whether it be a tooth extraction, back pain, any type of pain. And originally, the doctors prescribing these were told, as well as Congress, that they weren't of the addictive nature, which we now know is untrue.
Mm-hmm.
Today, I'm not really here to talk about blame of how this addiction came, but it's important to understand how we got to where we are and why we're doing some of the things that we're doing. So how does someone move from a prescription pain misuse over to heroin? Again, people scratch their heads not trying to understand, but if you remember, recall the definitions, they're all in the same pain as far as the same type of coping. It affects the same region of the brain as far as heroin, morphine, oxycodone, hydrocodone, those sorts of things. It's the same drug, so it's just prescribed and created in a different manner.
Right.
So what happens is when people, most of the people that are addicted to the to heroin and fentanyl, which we'll talk more about, is really, it's most of them, 3 out of 4, started on a prescription pain pill. And what happens is they can't afford their addiction any longer, and they move, having to move. So the difference of kind of cost is, if you're looking to buy a prescription pain pill on the street, that's a preferred, like an oxycodone, that can go on average in New Jersey for about $30. A bag of heroin is $5.
Right.
So, and really, you can get as cheap as $3 in some other places of the state. We're a little bit more expensive as we move further away from the places that sell. So that's kind of really how this all came to be. And you want to talk about why and how much in New Jersey is prescribed, just to give the audience an idea. In 2017, as far as the number of pills, prescription opioid pills that were prescribed, were over 4,867,000 pills that were dispersed just in that year. So we talk about availability, people not always using them in home medicine cabinets. Hunterdon County had 54,572 pills dispensed. So the volume, availability, accessibility is there. And just to kind of give you an idea of where we're trending right now, as of July 10th, just of this year, we're at 2,304,000 dispensed in New Jersey. Hunterdon County, we're trending a little bit lower than last year, which is a positive sign, at 25,700 opiate pain pills that were prescribed. So those are filling our home medicine cabinets. So availability and accessibility, especially to our youth, is there.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Is there any, new initiatives to tackle this opioid epidemic?
There are several of them. For example, I'd like to move over to our preventative partners and what we do. So our agency, Prevention Resources, created over 10 years ago a coalition. It's called the Safe Communities Coalition. And this coalition is comprised of all different types of people in the community, schools, parents, youth, law enforcement,
right.
Business, the chamber's a very big partner of ours, and we work together on environmental strategies to reduce substance use. And those environmental strategies are not, what does that mean? It's looking at policies, creating strategies where the likelihood of someone misusing a substance is significantly decreased. The best way I try to explain an environmental strategy is, if you think of airplanes and smoking, right. When my kids get on an airplane in today's environment, they don't understand why there's no smoking signs, because in their lifetime they've never seen anyone use tobacco on an airplane. when I was younger, not that I want to age myself, but
Me either.
Yeah, the back of the plane, you could smoke, you know, cigarettes, no problem. So that's what environmental strategies look like, is we look to try to change policies. Our state has been very responsible as far as Governor Christie put many things in place. For example, he put the prescription monitoring program in place where this monitoring system, it helps doctors as well as pharmacists and law enforcement look for any patterns of excessive prescribing. The doctors can also go into this program to see if what else someone's been prescribed, especially in the pain management. The reason that they want to do this is make sure that we have responsible prescribing. And this is really an initiative that's all states now, except for one, have this. So our surrounding states have the prescription monitoring program, but one of the issues is not all these systems communicate with one another. So that's
kind of something,
so that they can start looking, especially Hunter County. We're right on the border of Pennsylvania, which, by the way, is one of the highest prescribing states of opiates. So with that in mind, know that we're in a unique location of the state. Something else that the state did, Governor Christie did put in, restricting how many pain pills, especially for new injuries or new, that you can only have 5 days. So that was as far as, doesn't mean you can't get it refilled, but it means you have to go back in and visit a doctor. So as far as getting a pain, tooth extracted, whereas before you could get a high volume of opiates, now you can't get it for more than 5 days at a time. That is what the new law was in place. We also have permanent prescription drop-off boxes. We're very proud in Hunterdon County with initiative with the sheriff and the prosecutor. We were one of the first drop-off boxes I was back in, I think, 2011. We put one of the first boxes, and these boxes are all over the state. We put them in place for people to be able to dispose of their unused prescription medications. Right. And the reason why that's so important is we talked about the volume of prescribed pain pills, and that most youth start in home medicine cabinets. So we want to get those out of people's medicine cabinets, disposed of when they're no longer needed, so that they stay out of the hands for someone who might misuse them.
That's why they have these commercials that, for getting rid of them, where kids opening up the thing and taking it.
They show them.
The thing,
And one of the other things, too, I want to mention, so we've expanded now. We have 11 permanent prescription drop-off boxes in Hunterdon County. We also have another one that is a semi-permanent. What that means is that the sheriff office goes over and visits senior services once a month, where seniors can come and meet the sheriff there. We also participate in the DEA National Take Back a Day that happens twice a year nationwide. And sometimes people say, well, why do we do that if we have permanent boxes? What's great about the DEA Take Back is that we get a large national-wide movement and a lot of information in the paper that, again, reminds people to do this. Also in Hunterdon, which is phenomenal, again, working with our prosecutor and all the different police departments, we had the largest amount of semi-located, when I say semi, it means just for that day, where people can go in all their local towns to dispose, to make it more easier access to dispose. So that is really significant. We've also created partnerships with ShopRite. Actually, they were a really great partner with their pharmacy department in helping us create public service announcements about dropping off your medicines as well as safe lockup. You know, that is something else we've always talked about disposing, but what about locking up your medicine cabinets? You know, we lock up lots of these things when our kids are little, but we don't think to do that when they get older. So that is something else we talk about, is safe storage, ensuring you know what you have, that you don't have any pills missing.
Don't you have periodically townships that, like in the township office, say for argument's sake, Lebanon Township, and they can drop?
Well, so what happens is we can, that's only done if it's a special initiative. I really want to emphasize, you cannot take somebody's prescriptions for them.
right.
and dispose of them.
Right.
You have to be in possession of the prescriptions that are your own.
Right.
You can't just go around as yourself trying to be a good neighbor because it's against the law. So these drop-off boxes have to be in conjunction with law enforcement. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So they do those, at, especially around DEA take-back. Mm-hmm. A town might want to do that on their norm. Sometimes we've done it in the county where the sheriff has a pop-up drop-off location, and we work with law enforcement to advertise
right.
on those.
Go ahead.
I have a couple of questions.
Sure.
Now, is Percocet covered? Is that an opioid also?
That is an opioid, yep.
Yeah. Now, I'm thinking of seniors. I know sometimes they're prescribed. I know someone in particular who has back pain. Every morning she takes the Percocet.
Mm-hmm. So I'm glad you brought that up. When we talk about some of our new initiatives, we're very fortunate with our agency to be able to secure funds for the older adult population.
Right.
So it's a brand new initiative that's called Healthy Outlooks that we put together, launched it 2 months ago. And what we're doing is going around the county, and we're working with senior populations as well as their caregivers to offer and educate on healthy alternatives to right. taking medications. First thing, again, want to say we are not doctors. We're certainly not want to tell seniors that they should stop taking any medication without working with a doctor. But what we are trying to educate them on is their vulnerability of as far as misuse of medications. Our senior mm-hmm. population doesn't necessarily always reveal all the medications they're taking, say, to a pharmacist or an individual doctor.
Yeah.
So what Healthy Outlooks looks to educate people on is other things that they could possibly think about to help them reduce some of their pain management. For example, is physical therapy, yoga, meditation, and be able to give them things like have they thought of acupuncture? And it's all these other ways to manage pain, and we help prescribe that.
Right. We have to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a couple minutes.
Well, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR-DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 40 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisals, sales and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investors, Rabcoin has been for the industry since 1974. Founder and owner Randy Block has been an expert and an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875. You're listening to WHCR-DB, Hunterdon Chamber Radio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, paraplanner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Pat and Heidi and Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host, and co-host is Tracy Ivey. We're very privileged today to have with us Leslie Gable, who is the co-CEO of Hunterdon Prevention Resources, and we were talking about various different things. I'd like to go back to the older adults, which I think I fit into that category. I won't say. But anyway.
I'm getting closer myself.
Yeah, well, I'm there. So go ahead if you'd like to.
We were, before the break, we were talking about vulnerability, and our older population is certainly more vulnerable as far as the opioids go. Reason being, they are typically a part of our population that has a lot of medications. They also are at a time when they don't have the recent, most up-to-date information. And this is why we're going around educating about safe storage. I don't want to stereotype, but a lot of the older adults have a tendency to keep their medications out on the open, unsecure, that people visiting, especially young people visiting, their grandparents, they won't necessarily understand that these medications can be quite dangerous, and as well as medications taken unknown to them. So our older adults, we really are trying to educate so they understand if they have medication they no longer need, how they can dispose of it. But also alternatives, there's lots of alternatives, and I really do want to emphasize when we talk about pain management that there's many other things even the adult population, older adults really can do, and they adjust them for them. And what we do is try to connect all of them to the different resources that are free. We're not looking for people to have to go and spend more money, but how to connect them to opening their mind up to alternatives to pain medications.
Right.
Do you think it's common for people who are seniors to have, maybe they have chronic pain, to have a pain pill every single day? And is that a danger?
Well, again, I want to emphasize I'm not a doctor.
Okay.
Right. However, the more pain medication that anyone takes, the more likely they become addicted. Mm-hmm. And everybody is different. But I will tell you that anyone that gets on a long-term pain medications with an opioid is absolutely setting that storm like we talked about, because their body becomes, their tolerance level becomes their tolerance is much higher, which means that after a period of time, they need to take more.
And I have heard or read that after a while, if someone has become addicted, whether they know it or not, their body creates pain. So it's sort of almost mentally, I need medication. Mm-hmm. It creates a reason to need it.
Well, what happens, again, any age this goes for, is that what happens is, especially, you know, it says take every 4 hours a pill. Well, the aesthetic, you know, as far as how that feels to a person, might wear off within 2 hours. I'm in pain, I'm going to take another one. What happens is they start to they don't start off intentionally trying to misuse a medication, but misuse is significant. No one really sets out to say, I want to be addicted, but really the way our community has gotten across the country is not to feel pain. And, you know, I don't know how we got here, but if you think about it, and especially sharing medications is significant. If you're in pain, no one wants to see a loved one in pain. So family sharing medicine is very significant. And they don't realize that these pain pills, while you might take one and be fine, someone else could take one in a short time, become very addictive.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying, like, with the four-hour window, suddenly becomes three, and then maybe two. And
they layer. People layer medications that, so they start to self-diagnose, and they keep these medications around, and the interactions of these medications are really very, very dangerous. We really want to encourage everyone, and when I say especially older adults, they have a tendency to have a lot more prescriptions for different things that they really work with their doctors. And the number one thing, and I will mention this a few times, is what is the alternative to a pain pill? Is there something else I can do? most Americans want an instant fix. They don't want to do physical therapy. They don't want to do these other things. And I do want to say there is a time and a place that these opioids are there's okay. We really are not trying to say don't ever take it, but is there an alternative method? And is there a shortened window that I could speak to my doctor about?
Mm. What is the Family Support Center?
The Family Support Center is a brand new initiative that is funded from the New Jersey of Mental Health and Addiction Services. We're very fortunate to be one of the recipients of this grant, which covers many different counties, but covers Hunterdon. And we have a Family Support Center coordinator. Her name is Rocky Schwartz.
I know
and
her.
She is
very
phenomenal,
well.
Phenomenal. And what this service does is to work with the families of a loved one that has an addiction and be able to give them the support and services for them to get help that they
right.
need. And it's a wonderful initiative, and there's so many services that are available on how to connect people to these. It's very, I will say this, the system of support and services is not necessarily easy navigation because everyone's situation might be a little bit unique. And so what Rocky does for Hunterdon County residents is help them really kind of carve out what they might need and be able to connect them locally as well as statewide resources.
And she should know.
She is a wonderful advocate for
and not only that, like I said, it's like she's a person that has gone through this, you know, with her children, her two sons. Like I've gone through it with my son. And, you know, so it's not like we're just talking from a book. You know, we're talking from experience, and she is too.
She's an incredible, professional, compassionate person
right.
that is. We're so happy that and welcome her to our staff,
mm-hmm.
and as well as a great advocate for people here
right.
in the county.
Yeah, I've known her quite a while.
Is there a call-in center connected with the family support, or
just wonder? You mentioned services. What types of, just briefly, what types of services are available?
So if someone wants to get information in connecting the service, you can visit our website, which is njprevent.com, or call, which is Prevention Resources, 908-782-3909.
Do you want to repeat that website again?
Sure. It's njprevent.com.
782-3909. Okay, great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And we were talking at the break, CARA. What does that stand for?
CARA stands for, let me see if I can get my acronyms right. It's the Comprehensive Addiction Recovery Act.
Okay.
So CARA is a very broad funding stream from the federal government that put out all of these funds to help fight the opiate crisis. One of the recent initiatives that Prevention Resources is very fortunate to be awarded a grant, one out of, actually, there was only four given to the state of New Jersey, and we received one of them, which we just got funded last month. And what we did when we wrote this grant is to think of and create strategies to fight the opiate crisis. And so what our strategies are is to create a two different types of task force within the county. One task force will be adult-based, but the other will be youth-based and diverse as far as creating an opportunity for youth from all different backgrounds and different ages to come together to create strategies to fight and educate on substance use. Substance use does not start, 9 times out of 10 does not start with heroin, like I mentioned before.
Right.
It comes from something else in our, especially our youth. We know we would say that it was alcohol was the first substance they used, but in many cases it's tobacco. And we can talk a little bit later on about the vaping that's going on in our state significantly. So what this task force with the youth will create these strategies that will be a peer-to-peer and be able to also implement and be able to give some resources, meaning some funding for their ideas. The adult task force is to help connect all these great different things that we're doing, healthcare, education, businesses,
mm-hmm.
art prevention, recovery, treatment, and bring them together for a united task force for the county And these funds will help then create an education-based as well as other types of prevention and coordinate all of these resources so they're not operating in silos.
Right.
We do a lot of work. I don't want to say that we all have silos, but sometimes with the nature of what we do becomes that. And what we want to do is really, even though we do a lot of work already with our coalition, is be able to use these funds and resources and unite everyone within the county. So we're very excited. We'll be launching that this fall.
Now, we had mentioned earlier fentanyl. Would you
yes.
explain what that is?
So fentanyl, again, is what some might know it is an end-of-life. It's a heavy-duty opiate pain management. Fentanyl is not given out for some of these other things that I've just mentioned, but it is an end-of-life drug. Fentanyl is really created a rise in overdose deaths in the state. So what happens is the fentanyl that I'm talking about is coming from overseas.
Right.
They're lab manufactured, and so why would you use fentanyl instead of heroin? Well, what they're doing, what the dealers are doing, is they're mixing these two compounds, getting a very intense, much higher high with the fentanyl. It's very deadly. The likelihood of death is great. So you'd say, why would you do this? Well, if I use fentanyl and I can cut my heroin into a lot bigger, broader base, I don't have to wait for the poppy plants to grow. I now have a lab-based drug. And why would you want to kill your end users? They don't think like this. These are people that are very, they're people very unexperienced. They're not chemists. So if I can tell you what happened to Prince, yeah. who died of
Prince.
Michael
Jackson.
So what happened with Prince, his plane, they had to make an emergency landing. He had overdosed. But the doctors looked in a bottle of pills and that were an opiate pain pill. So he was reversed, sent home with that same bottle. He took some more of that drug. But some of those other pills, they were not real pills. That's how these fake pills on the street look. And there was a higher dose of fentanyl, and that's what killed Prince, as does, unfortunately, many others. Why do they put them in these pills? Is they look like they're safer and
right.
better. But how they distribute the drug is not, they're not chemists to manufacture in a lab. They're buying these pill presses and making these pills on the street.
Mm-hmm.
So it is the amount of money that can be had by doing this is so significant that's not in their thought mm-hmm. process.
Mm-hmm. Aren't some doctors also prescribing fentanyl or not for what it's supposed to be prescribed
fentanyl
for?
Fentanyl is really prescribed, but the fentanyl I'm describing is the ones that are coming from overseas.
But
fentanyl is really given in very specific situations. Fentanyl
okay.
is very highly potent, highly, highly addictive.
Right.
And that's not something that's regularly prescribed. That's
okay.
from a pain management specialist, and that's not something most doctors would prescribe. But fentanyl, the likelihood of overdosing is so significant and is what really is harming. As I don't know if I've mentioned this, but unfortunately we've lost 1,600 people already to overdoses just through July 15th of this year.
And that is in where? The state of New Jersey?
State of New Jersey.
Uh-huh.
Mm. It is, one life is too many,
mm-hmm.
and most people do not set out to use this substance thinking that they're going to overdose and die.
Right.
The way that addiction works in the brain, it just doesn't operate that way.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you feel that there's such an increase in the drug abuse over the last couple of years?
You know, Larry, it's a question we talk a lot about. We definitely know the prescription drugs as a rise as far as why there's the substance use disorder has grown significantly. But Americans, and we look at our youth, is a really changing environment. The way that we've been able to study it is that most people are having trouble and not given the skills at an earlier, younger age of coping. So they turn to substances to help manage. Our 18 to 25-year-old population are such vulnerability. The reason they're at high vulnerability is that they're coming out of going into college, the pressure to compete, manage independently kind of for the first times in their lives, that while they might have started off at a younger age for enjoyment, becomes a necessity in order to manage themselves.
I think that, it's just my opinion now, mm-hmm. that the pressure that the youth today is under, get good grades, be on a sports team, you know, be a leader in your class, you know, be able to get into mm-hmm. a scholarship to a prestigious college, I think it leads to more and more youth because of the pressure that, I'm not saying all parents, but society in general, along with their parents, put them under.
It is. It's a multitude. But there's lots of research going on about what fuels different types of addictions. But I want to just put the thought process out there, because when many of us were younger, or older, right, we didn't have access as far as instant answers. We wanted instant reactions to what we needed. Nowadays, our youth are growing up with the internet and being able to get an answer. There's not a patience of having to learn patience and waiting. And that, as far as when you think of a lot of the other prescriptions people are given, I think changing the chemistry of the body, lots of these things coming up in the way people are raised with all these additional right. pressures, not giving the skill sets of having to cope and be patient, to wait, to manage, I think builds this unfortunate perfect storm up. Mm-hmm. And lots of, with that being said, though, I think, especially in Hunterdon County, there's lots of entities that are working very hard. I can tell you in the schools, for example, a lot of mindfulness programs, getting people to help pause, being able to use themselves as ways to help cope and manage. We do life skills programs. There's also a lot of other alternatives that we try to put in place.
Right.
For pain management and our education of our youth. There are good things that are happening in our county, so I don't want to paint this really dull.
No,
but I'll say that our county, for example, I'd like to mention our prosecutor, Anthony Kearns.
Right.
Years ago, we worked together with him and law enforcement and created a diversion program. So that's for kids that are 17 and under, working together in conjunction to be able to build their life skills and decision-making to get them back on the right track, not to put them in the juvenile justice uh-huh. system. Again, this is a law enforcement program. This is not something that you can go in and go, hey, put me in this program. It doesn't work like that, but it's a tool for law enforcement. Yeah. And again, they work with the prosecutor to create ways to help kids. And I think that that's just incredible. You don't see that in all the other counties.
Right.
So,
what about drug court? Do we have that here?
We have drug court for adults.
Right.
That is a program that is put out through the state. I will tell you, drug court is very difficult. It is not as simple. It's years of working through that. Many in the state prefer to go to prison instead.
Yeah.
We know many people who do.
I think it's painted as something, wonderful thing.
Well, drug court is work. You have to show up quite frequently.
Be tested.
You have to live a substance-free life.
Mm-hmm.
You have to
pass their tests.
You have to pass their tests.
Sure.
You have to mm-hmm. Put in a structure that some people don't want to have mm-hmm. or want to live and have to report in.
Right.
I see.
So
right.
it is, and it's years. There's all different stages of drug court.
Okay.
I'm definitely not an expert
right.
on that, but I can tell you it's put in place as a way, again, as an alternative for adults.
Okay.
I've had
great.
The prosecutor on this show,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
He's just wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He really wants to see youth, and in general youth, but younger people, rather than go to jail, go on the other track. And,
mm-hmm. It's remarkable. Again, that program wouldn't work without private funds, some county funds
mm-hmm.
that are contribute
right.
to help, because it's a free program that was created.
Right.
And like I said, if the officers, it takes a lot more work for an officer with all the paperwork and things that they have to do.
Exactly.
So it's everybody trying to work together.
Mm-hmm.
And the prosecutor did a wonderful job in working with our agency and researching how to do this. So we're very proud of that.
What can the general population do to help reduce this epidemic?
First and foremost, lock up your medicines. That's all medicines, by the way, not just the opioids. Anything that can be misused. Lock it up. Keep it safe. You no longer need it. Get rid of it. The best way you can get rid of it is a permanent prescription drop-off box.
Yeah, you don't want to just dump it down the toilet or put it in the garbage or anything.
Think of our animals, children getting into garbages and especially protect our environment and our animals. You definitely want to do that. The very first thing, though, is when you're at a doctor and you're put with a situation, you want to ask them, is there an alternative to this, an opioid? Ask. There's many other types of medications. You know, again, you're having surgery. There's medicines you need for a short period of time.
Right.
Just work with your doctor. Ask the question, what is the addiction, you know, what's the addictive nature that possibly can happen? Make sure it's a plan that works best with you and a plan that it's a short-term program. I really want to emphasize to follow what your doctor is, but you really can ask that question of a doctor. Is there an alternative, especially if you are prone to addiction in your family?
Do you think the kids are aware enough of this? I mean, I know the adults would. I remember picking up my daughter, and she had just had some wisdom teeth removed, and there she goes home with the Percocet or whatever, and I'm cautioning her. Do you think the teenagers know as much as, are they aware enough about the addiction?
We're getting there as far as educating our kids.
Yeah.
Our school systems in Hunterdon have done a good job as far as trying to get as much information as they can with them. I will say, though, that there's parts of our youth that are quite vulnerable, especially our athletes. We have a new initiative that was put together through, again, the New Jersey Division of Mental Health and Addiction Services. Our coalition received this grant, and this grant will be launching the toolkit this fall. And the toolkit that we put together in conjunction with all the other coalitions.
Can you hold that thought for a minute?
Yep, I will.
All right. We have to take a quick break. We're listening to Mental Health Matters, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in a critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Welcome back to Mental Health Matters, where our guest today is Leslie Gable from the Hunterdon Prevention Resources. And before we went to the break, you were talking about
the athletes. Athletes
if
are
you
another.
Could, go back to that.
Yeah, the athletes are another subpopulation that are a higher risk. Research has shown because they're more likely to be prescribed a opiate pain pill because of sports injuries. Certain sports are a lot, higher likely of injury. The more contact a sport has, the more likely they have injury. What happens with the athletes is that they have a habit of really not divulging their injuries, say, to their coaches, because they don't want to lessen their time. As we, Larry, you were talking about how competitive it is. Athletes across the country, no different here than in Hunterdon County, are trying to get back on the field or the court as soon as possible. And what happens is they also have a habit of sharing their prescriptions with a fellow person, you know, on their team, because of wanting to get, as I said, quicker, faster in repair, as far as also managing their pain while playing. So their likelihood of misusing a prescription pain pill is high. So what are we doing about this? As I mentioned, our New Jersey of Mental Health and Addiction Services has funded our coalition, and one of the initiatives was creating a toolkit. And this toolkit has been standardized across the state that provides all sorts of resources and education geared towards parents, athletes, coaches, school nurses, trainers. And what we're doing is, starting this fall, is launching education programs out into these areas of the population, being able to make them aware of this vulnerability, and as well as to give them the resources that they need, as well as educating the parents.
Do you have any volunteers on your staff, or how big is your staff, and has it gotten bigger over the years?
Our staff has definitely grown. We have at our agency 18 staff members. But the majority of the work that I'm talking about is really through our coalition, which is comprised of over 45 members. Mm-hmm. Most of them, as I've mentioned, are all volunteers. Right. We work collectively together. In this initiative, we'll be working, presenting. We have paid staff that will be doing the prevention programs out in the field as far as the athletes go. But our coalition is comprised of many different entities. And, yes, so they do volunteer their work on that. We're very grateful. Mm-hmm.
What do you think is important to talk about in our last few minutes that we haven't covered?
The one thing is, all these different resources and initiatives that we're talking about can be found on our coalition's website, which is www.safecoalition.org. And you can find out our prescription drop-off boxes. You can look at our documentaries. You can look at some of the initiatives we're also doing around marijuana and underage drinking. So this website will be a host of lots of different information, as well as soon to host our toolkit that I said we'll be launching shortly. In the last few minutes, I would also like to talk about another initiative we have, is our recovery center. The recovery center we started over 2 years ago is housed out of our family success center, which is on Park Avenue. The recovery service services are very limited. So when someone gets out of treatment, there's very little services and support that people need. The likelihood of someone relapsing is so significantly high with the opiates, especially. So what we did is we created this recovery center as a way for people to come for support, support one another as a peer-to-peer support, provide a place that they can come and be able to be in a place that's welcoming, accepting, non-judgmental, as well as to be able to help them in anything they need. It is not clinical by any means. It's a way, as I said, to have that peer-to-peer support. We're open on Wednesday nights and Saturdays. As I said, we created this with no funding, so we're always looking to try to expand the hours of operation to help people in the recovery community, and we still keep advocating for the state to help, you know, support that. Because recovery services right now, are there's nothing that really helps somebody once they're out of treatment.
So people want to find out more about that, do they go to safecoalition.org or where?
They could call our agency, which is 908-782-3909 is their best place to, as far as the recovery center.
Got it. Okay.
Leslie, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to come here and inform the public and myself and Tracy, about
you,
all the things that is going on. And, you know, anything that NAMI can do to help you, you know, you can always call me.
Thank you so much, and appreciate the opportunity. And if anyone needs any help or support, to please reach out to us, because if there's some place that we, if there's something we can't do, we certainly will try to find the place that you can get the help that you need. So we're very grateful.
And before your fall programs, if yes. you'd like to come back.
That would be wonderful.
You know, that'd be great. You could talk about your fall programs.
That would be all right. Wonderful.
We just said earlier all we right. had an opening September 30th, so maybe we can do that. Yeah.
Great.
September 24th.
Thank you yep. so much.
All right.
Great. Thank you so much.
We thank you very much for listening. And don't forget, folks, mental health really does matter. See you next week.
Everybody over there.
Get on up.
Everybody out there.
Get into it.
Everybody right there.
Get involved.
Everybody, you.
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News.
President Trump took to Twitter to warn the Iranian president that he will face dire consequences if he continues to threaten the United States. Congressman Doug Collins on what message Iran should take from the president's tweets.
Well, I think it means that they can no longer manipulate a weak and meandering president that they had in President Obama, who just wanted to apologize to the world and be a weak link in basically a security chain. When you face a bully, when you face someone who wants to say one thing on one side and then seed death and destruction around the world on another, they do not need to be played with. They need to be stood up to.
Members of the House and Senate are working on a phase two to President Trump's tax cut plan. Congressman Steve Scalise on what that plan would entail.
The plan's to continue focusing on getting the economy moving, seeing this great economic growth, and then locking it in. We're going to bring some more bills to cut taxes. We're going to make the tax cuts permanent.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
Okay, so the big question for any decision you're going to make, is this actually going to work? Well, if you've heard about MediShare, which is a brilliant way of sharing health care costs, you may have wondered that. Does it work? Well, so did Dr. Stuart Hoover, who initially joined to save a lot of money. The typical family saves about $500 a month. Stuart saved even more.
When we first joined MediShare, we were immediately going from a little over $1,600 a month down to $460 basically a month.
So that's wonderful, but then his wife needed emergency surgery and the bills added up to $160,000.
So we were seeing the bills coming in, and then the bills were being paid. Portions were being shared, and the end result of this bill was taken care of.
Yes, MediShare works, and it's so easy to get your questions answered too, so why not? You can call right now, 833-39-BIBLE. That's 833-39-BIBLE, 833-39-BIBLE.
A man charged in a crash that killed a Dallas police officer during a funeral procession is out on bond. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes has more on the story.
Suspect Adrian Breedlove is charged with intoxication manslaughter. He's accused of plowing into Senior Corporal Jamie Givens. Givens was at the time blocking an Interstate 20 ramp for the funeral escort of a fellow officer on Saturday morning. Breedlove was booked into the Dallas County Jail later that day, and bail was set at $76,000. He posted that bail early Sunday. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Police in Toronto, Canada are not ruling out terrorism as a motive for a man who walked down a busy street and fired in the restaurants and cafes, shooting and killing 14 people. This eyewitness describes the scene.
I thought it was fireworks at first, because it was a rapid fire. More people were running, and so we started running, and we ran down a side street.
The attacker did die after exchanging gunfire with police. You're listening to USA Radio News.
When working at a growing business, you wear many hats. The new business hat, the buying toner for the copy machine hat, the sifting through tons of resumes hat. You can throw away that last hat thanks to Indeed.com. When posting your job, Indeed lets you add screener questions that give you a less time-consuming route to your short list of qualified candidates. So go ahead, dust off that extra long lunch hat. Hiring's better when you've got your short list. Save time on hiring when you post a job on Indeed. Get started today at Indeed.com/hire.
Representative Bob Goodlatte said that the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act court application for a warrant to surveil the Trump campaign associate highlights a, quote, serious problem, unquote, in the FBI. The warrant application was signed by former FBI Director James Comey and former CIA Director John Brennan. Goodlatte says Brennan can expect to be chatted with very soon.
We have lots of questions for John Brennan, and he will definitely be sought by the committees for an interview. This is an extremely disturbing thing to see both he and James Comey, supposedly impartial government officials carrying out their jobs in very important areas intelligence gathering and law enforcement, express the kind of extreme bias that they've shown now, which I think reflects quite accurately on what they were doing back in 2016.
Brennan was also asked who else we can expect to see at hearings in the near future.
Well, we're going to go through. We've received a list from the Intelligence Committee of literally dozens of people. We're going through that list now and determining which ones are our priority. I think I would rather leave it at that, but certainly we will also be talking to Director Comey and former Attorney General Lynch.